Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly, episode 97 for November 26th, 2009. Exist DB. Floss Weekly is brought to you by the new voice-activated Sync, featuring hands-free calling, music search, and turn-by-turn navigation. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details and to enter to win a free Nano or Zune, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com.
And by listeners like you. Thanks so much for your contribution. We couldn't do TWiT without it.
It's time for Floss Weekly, the show that covers everything having to do with free, libre, and open source software. And here he is, the star of our show, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Randall Schwartz. Hey, Randall.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you again. I am so excited because between last week's show and this week's show, I got to do my presentation that I've been prepping for about a month and a half, Ignite Portland, igniteportland.com. I got to do my karaoke for fun and profit, five-minute talk, in front of an audience of about 600 people.
Wow.
And they were tweeting like mad, and it was great. I got
now, this is not the first time.
Afterwards.
You gave it a week before, right?
I gave it to a little bit smaller audience, like about 30
people. Really well with that audience, but this is good. That was like a little rehearsal.
It was like a little rehearsal because I had never done an Ignite before. Now, for those of you listening to the show for a few weeks, you already know the format of this. But if you're just tuning in for the first time, Ignite is a five-minute presentation that has slides that are automatically advancing every 15 seconds. So you have no control over how they advance. So you have to work out your entire speech ahead of time, figure out what slide would make sense for 15 seconds, given that you might run a little long or a little short on each one. Mm-hmm. So you have to also manage your time. It's a whole different format for me. I did a blog posting on merlin.vox.com, Merlin with a Y, that talked about my experience of how different that is for me compared to what I normally do for training. And I also have links from there to both the presentation, the video that was shot of me for Ignite Portland, and the video that I published a few weeks back for Ignite Salem. So if you go to merlin.vox.com, one of the most recent blog posts here, we'll talk about both of those. So I'm excited about that. It was a thrill. I love to do it. The problem now is, what do I pitch that will top that?
Yeah. You can't just keep giving that speech over and over and over again.
Maybe in different venues. Actually, somebody said, well, you're going to do this in Corvallis now? You're going to do it in Seattle? You're going to do it in Boise?
Yeah. And I go, comedians don't write new material for every club.
They don't?
No.
I always thought they did.
Oh, hell no.
My career as a comedian.
most comics use the same material over and over and over. They might add a new joke here, a new joke there, but it's like,
Except the part where they say, hello, I'm really, really happy
hello,
to be here.
Cleveland.
Blank. And then they put a blank there.
Exactly.
I get it now. It's a template.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I learned that because I, for some reason, have this weird compulsion to write a fresh speech every time. And it's killing me because, that's a lot of work. You got to know the audience. And I just,
only got one story in you. So
it's exactly true. It's exactly true. And I the other day I did a speech and I repeated a couple of stories and I felt guilty. It's like, oh, you've already heard this. But it's a whole different audience. You have to get over that.
I mean, and that's what the Salem people told me when I said, can I, I don't want to pitch a different talk because I'm already up to my ears trying to write this one. I go, no, we want you to do this same talk down in Salem. And I go, okay, that's great. Yeah. And there was a bit of overlap. Actually, there's some couple of people that saw it in both places. And, I've got to say, I'm critical of myself. I did it the second time. There were things I did better and things I didn't do as well. It sucks, but that's live for you. That's how it works, right?
Every speech, and I come off the speech going, that was okay. That was great. That was not so great. And you want to be consistent, but it's hard.
Yeah, I left out a whole phrase in one of the slides that really sort of brought the slide home, and it's like,
You can't rewind. You can't do it again.
That's the whole thing about
Where's
live.
Where's the edit button?
Yeah, that's right. It's just like this show. It's like,
we can fix something.
Well, but, the 72 people that are watching us live, we got to watch out for them.
I hate to tell you, but it's a few more than that.
If
we,
more than that,
if we were able to bring down the, well, we'll tell you later.
we don't want to tell you the punchline, but stay tuned through the rest of the show and hear what happens when 72 angry open source users attack a website.
It's true. Also, since it is still going on, I have to pitch myself also for podcastawards.com. We've been nominated. It's a thrill to have been nominated in the technical category for Floss Weekly. I really appreciate that to all you guys. We have a few days left of voting. It's through November 30th, I think. So yes. We've still got a few more days.
You can vote daily. Yes.
Vote daily. And again, you know, a lot of Leo's shows, a lot of your shows are nominated in all sorts of categories. I'm even up against Security Now in the technical category. So vote for whoever you want to. But I tell you, you're listening to this show, vote for me. That's all I'm saying.
That's all he's saying. That's all he's saying. I recused myself because Randall asked me to plug it. And I said, but Randall, I can't because I have other shows. So basically, my attitude, and I sincerely mean this, is go to podcastawards.com, vote every day, and vote for any podcast as long as you love it. It doesn't even have to be one of ours. The point is, this supports the industry of podcasting, and we really want to do that.
I mean, like, I used one of my voting days to vote for Callie Lewis, who's voting is against me, and I voted for Security Now, because all three of these shows are shows I listen to and watch on a regular basis. Well, not my own, but I mean...
Well, you're here for every show, so it's okay. You get off the hook for that one.
I do. I actually, you know, for quality control...
No, and I love Skepticality. I mean, these are all great shows, so... Exactly. And MacCast, you know, I mean, so it's hard to pick one. I wouldn't be sad to lose to any of these.
Like I said, I consider it an honor to have just been nominated. Yeah. I'm thrilled to death about that. This is definitely a new high point for me in terms of what I've been doing here with Floss Weekly and stuff. But yeah, vote for whoever you want to, and you're listening to me, vote for me.
Yes.
So there.
Who do we have on the show today?
You know, Leo, we've had a few shows in the last month or two that have been sort of, you know, anybody can understand what we're talking about because it's just a distro or a general technology or something. Uh-oh. I decided just to mix up the pitches just a little bit. Today's show is a high-end technical geeko, massive TLA, three-letter acronyms, mass out show. We have brought on the Wolfgang Meyer, a good German man who many years ago, actually, almost back all the way to 2000, created this thing called ExistDB. Now, if that's not already geeky enough, ExistDB is an XML database, which means instead of having traditional rows and columns like you'd have in an SQL database, he actually stores the documents, as far as I can tell, stores the documents in their native XML shape, which is more hierarchical than rectangular. So, and there's all sorts of, there's XSLT involved and XQuery language and REST and SOAP. And I tell you, I think we're going to have more acronyms than we've had in a show in a long time. So if your eyes start glazing over, I'll know. It's no problem.
Well, I'm going to give you...
Will enjoy it.
No, I think you'll all enjoy it. Before we get to that, though, I want to give you one more acronym, SYNC. We should come up with what that means. Say your next command. How about that? Because it's Ford Sync. Ford Sync is SYNC, and it's a way that you can tell your car what you want. It's better than Kit Knight Rider. I have Sync in my Ford. I drive a Ford Mustang. I just got it a couple of weeks ago. I love this car, but I especially love the Sync. In fact, I don't want to get in a car that doesn't have Ford Sync in it. I mean, this thing is so incredible. The whole point is you don't take your eyes off the road or your hands off the wheel, and yet you can get everything done. In fact, with some phones, you can even have it read you the text messages, including all the profanities, by the way. If somebody says WTF, it will read what the... And so be careful if you have a mixed audience in the car about listening to text messages. It has canned messages you could set out, so no typing. You could say, play Floss Weekly. You can say play Floss Weekly and the number. I mean, if it's in the title, if you say play Floss Weekly 97, it'll play this episode. You could say call Randall Schwartz at home. It'll call him at home. Well, assuming that you know his number. It works with all the phones. And you can have 25 different phones paired, which is great. I have a couple of phones, so I pair them both. I think every car should have a USB port. I mean, that's cool. It has a USB port and an audio jack, you know, an audio jack. So, Garen, if something has a headphone port, you can connect it to the audio jack. Better yet, if you've got the USB cable, whether it's an iPod, a Zune, a Droid, a Kindle, I'm not kidding. If it's got a USB cable and you can plug it in and then the sync software can see what's on that device, and it works fine with the Zune, and it works fine with the iPod, it will index the contents of the device, and then you can ask for them by name. You could say, play the Beatles, play Yellow Submarine. You could say, play next, play previous, play similar. You could say, I want the weather. It'll tell you local weather because it knows where you are. It's got built-in GPS with turn-by-turn directions. You don't have to pay thousands of dollars for GPS service. It's in there. I could go on and on. I want you to take a look at Ford Sync right now. Go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com. That's the website, SyncMyRidePodcast.com. And find out how you could tweet to win. Ford's giving away 15 Zunes and iPods. This is their way of telling you it works with both. All you have to do is tweet something like, golly, happy birthday, Leo and Randall. And then pound Sync My Ride Podcast, and the present's yours because you're headed automatically in the drawing to win one of the 15 iPods or Zunes. They're giving away one a day through December 9th. And all you have to do is use the hashtag Sync My Ride Podcast, or just go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com for complete official rules, details, and more importantly, everything you'd ever want to know about the Ford Sync. And Randall, next time you were in a car, get a Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury and say, I want the sync in it. This thing's amazing. It does vehicle health reports. It'll send a text message saying, I've got a new health report. You go to the website. You can see what all of the various components on your system, your engine, your transmission, your brakes, your oil, how they're doing. This is great, by the way. If you're bringing your car in for service, you show the mechanic, look, this is what's going on with it. Recall information. You can schedule service online. This is amazing. I want you to go to Sync My Ride Podcast and find out more about the incredible Ford Sync. I'm a fan. I know you will be too. And we thank Ford for supporting open source. How do you like that? With Floss Weekly. All right. Are you ready to go to Germany?
Yeah.
I think he's in Frankfurt. Wolfgang Meyer on the line. Are you in Frankfurt?
Yeah, sure. That's close great. To Frankfurt, actually.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's probably all I will be able to figure out. So,
how close to Frankfurt? Is there a name just for the five people that probably live near you?
It's Rüsselsheim.
Okay. I've been to Darmstadt.
That's not too far away, just 20 kilometers or so.
Yeah, I've been to Darmstadt, so I know a little bit about that.
Rüsselsheim is quite famous right now because it's the headquarters of Opel, the company which General Motors tried to sell. They didn't sell it right now, but they were supposed to do it. So,
well, we have another connection because my very first car was an Opel Kadett.
Ah, right. Okay.
I know how to fix. I could tune that car. I know how to fix that car because I had to. I was an impoverished student.
So this whole show could be about things about Germany we didn't know we had connections with.
Let's talk about ExistDB.
Yeah.
Are you the chief developer on this, Wolfgang, or is there a large team working on it?
I created the project quite some time ago, actually. It's now nearly 10 years. And I've been working on it for the first 2 years, more or less on my own, but then new people started to contribute. And I think right now we have a core team working together every day, like five, six people. And then there are, 10, 20, 30 more people are contributing to certain areas, certain features or extensions, indexes, query features, whatever.
What was the problem you were trying to solve at the beginning? What problem were you trying to solve? What was missing that had you start this?
Oh, when I started the project in around 2000, summer 2000, XML had already been released as a specification, but not much more. So in the beginning, we just had XML documents, and I was working with HTML before that. And we had XML documents, and we used at that time still that horrible StyleChat language called Dissl, which was a scheme dialect. Mm-hmm. And but there wasn't much more. No way to query those documents. And I had lots of those documents, and I thought about how I could query them efficiently. And I ended up in my summer holiday reading a few papers about efficient indexing of XML, and it was mm-hmm. all quite new at that time, and decided to implement some of the procedures and algorithms I found in those papers. And yeah, that's how it started. And over time, it evolved. As more and more standards came into the XML family. So now it's a whole stack of standards, but it all grew over the years.
Okay, so you started with something that was just really efficient at indexing because you read this paper on it. Now, one of the things that I'm familiar with in terms of XML is that it sort of doesn't shape well into traditional databases because it's all about hierarchical data rather than, you know, rows and columns. Now, is that one of the problems you were trying to solve initially with this indexing? Is how do you get efficient indexing because it's triangular rather than square?
Yeah, well, the huge advantage of XML databases in general is that you don't need to shred your XML document into relational tables anymore. Uh-huh. But what the database does, it takes the model of your document, basically the tree model behind it, and directly stores that into an efficient data structure. So you can query that immediately without creating a mapping scheme or anything. You just put your data into the database and then start writing your queries. So it's very good for a rapid prototyping approach. You don't need all this mapping to and from tables. So that's one advantage all XML databases have, and that's why they are used. In Exist in particular, I was interested in how to address nodes within that document tree so I could efficiently access them anytime without loading the entire document back into memory, because that's what you don't want if you have really large documents.
Well, you would address those with XPath, right? Did XPath exist at the time?
XPath, it always existed in a rough version, I think. The problem just is XPath, the core expressions in XPath are find me all title tags which are descendants of chapters, things like that. Mm-hmm. So basically what Exist does, it applies a so-called numbering scheme to the document tree. And this numbering scheme allows you, if you have the number of the title, you can immediately tell if this number can actually be a descendant of any chapter. So it's just by comparing those numeric node document IDs that you can resolve those path expressions.
Right. So you start with an XML document. You can query it with XPath, and then you've as data matured, as a specification matured, you added XQL to it. I understand, right?
Later on, there were those other attempts to create a query language, and we finally ended up with XQuery, which is a rather complete functional language, I think. Which means it's not just a query language like SQL is. We use XQuery pretty much also as a server-side web development language. I have written quite a few websites just using XQuery and things like XSLT. So it's not like just a query language, but it's also a replacement for things like PHP or JSP or whatever. The good thing is that you can use XML and related standards to create an entire website, and you don't need to bother with any other high-level languages.
So let me understand this then. So you can start with XML documents as your data source.
Yeah.
You would use XQL to pull out pieces of that XQuery language, and then you'd also maybe process some of that with XSLT perhaps, or is that parallel to XQL? And then it would spit out entire web pages. The browser couldn't tell that you've got all this machinery going on behind the scenes. Is that a description?
Yeah, sure. For example, our entire website is powered like that. So all the tools on the website, even the tools to try out XQuery stuff or to look up the function documentation, whatever, it's all just XQuery running in the background on the server, on the database, and that the XQuery directly has access to the XML documents stored in the database and all the indexes and stuff.
Well, this seems a bit unusual compared to traditional approaches like PHP and MySQL, so... Would somebody coming from a PHP world be completely confused by all this? Is there a transition path, or is it actually pretty natural once you start playing with? Of course, you'll say yes to that. But tell me how I would get from the PHP world to what you're talking about.
Oh well, we have quite a lot of users who start with PHP or even Perl or whatever they learned first, and then they discover Exist or another XML database, and they start programming to the database. Like we offer SOAP interfaces or REST style interfaces, XML RPC. Exist has 6-7 different network interfaces you can use it from, and so people still continue to write PHP scripts until at some point they start to create more and more complex XQueries and finally discover, okay, so basically I could just replace my entire PHP script that I had previously with my XQuery. So it's a step-by-step learning process, I think.
So this would be similar to taking, say, a traditional database that has stored procedures like, say, Postgres, and discovering that I can move a little bit more of my application into the Postgres stored procedures rather than computing it in my view code. I could push that more and more into the data processing code until eventually my entire program is one line of PHP or one line of Perl that says, go take this data and give me the URL content for it, right?
Yeah, exactly, a little bit like that. Except that it's not just XQuery, but it's the entire XML stack you have available. Like, you can combine it with X forms to create web-based forms, and it's very natural for X forms to interact with an XML database, because your form, it would just send an XML document back to the database, which would store it or process it in XQuery or whatever. What's also very natural, I think, for people coming from Perl or PHP is that Exist allows you, in the same way as SQL has stored procedures, it allows you to store those XQueries into the database, and then you can map them to an URI or whatever. So basically you end up with a RESTful architecture where URIs do directly translate to queries running in the background, which access the database. And from there, it's rather easy to create a modularized application.
Wow. Let me bring us back to something I can relate to again. So let's say you had a blog and you wanted to manage your blog using this system. I could store an XML doc that has abstract posting, subject, date, body, reference URL or something, repeat it over and over again in an XML doc with one particular schema, and then generate some SQL pages that would extract this and provide the view for the typical blog visitor. But I could also have another URL published that would directly execute SQL to go give me the RSS feed for that blog. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. If you look at our own blog or wiki, it works like that. It stores all the entries and feeds as Atom. Atom is another XML standard. It directly stores that stuff as an Atom feed, and what you're editing on the wiki page is actually the Atom entry. And it's one XQuery which does the entire rendering, the display of the translation of the atom feed into a web page. You can also certainly directly click on the feed link and get the live atom feedback.
This all sounds expensive in performance wise. Am I going to get the same sort of throughput out of a box that I would get if I just had the lamp stack on that?
Well, it depends. I mean, there's certainly a price you have to pay, but I think that's a price you have to pay for the entire technology. In the beginning of XML, people used to believe that you could really replace your good old MySQL or Oracle database with an XML database. That might be true, but I never really believed that it's always useful. I think there are lots of use cases where the good old relational database is still, a very good choice. If you have well-structured data, which you can easily manage, where you can define a good fixed schema, which you don't need to change afterwards, then why switch to an XML database? It doesn't make much sense, doesn't help much. But if your application is going to be more complex and you need to mix heavily structured, well-structured data with less regularly structured data, if you have a mixture of text-like documents with table-like data, then it makes a lot of sense to use an XML database. And in that case, you certainly have to pay a price for all the processing power XQuery has to offer and for the simplicity of its use. But I think if you do it in an intelligent way, you'll also always be able to get enough performance out of it.
So this puts you in the same league, I would guess, as these newfangled document-based systems like CouchDB and Mongo and things like that. Are you exchanging ideas with them now, or... are you just saying, well, it took you 6 years to get to the party, but we're already here? Or where are you with all those guys?
I'm very interested in those technologies, and we're certainly watching them and what they do. And I think there are a few interesting developments we can benefit from. For example, if I look at some of the... key value based storage backends, then I could also think about using those backends if they are very efficient if any exist, why not? So I think we are learning from them. And I'm also always interested in incorporating other people's open source code if possible. So that's an interesting development. But the entire XML thing is a lot about standards, and there's not just one standard XML, but a lot of other standards around it which have developed throughout the years. I mean, let's say there's Atom for content publishing. There are standards like TI, the Text Encoding Initiative, which is heavily used within the humanities. There are lots of other XML-based standards. And I think that's a big advantage of the whole XML thing, that you have all those standards working together. And in the end, it should all be... it should all integrate into one framework, which is as easy as possible to use for the end user. That's our goal.
So it seems like it would be then, as you're saying, if I understand this, to take these existing XML standards and use appropriate XSLT and XQuery against those incoming and outgoing documents to, and like this database is closer to all that, being an XML native database So for those applications where you're interfacing with existing standards, it makes sense to use something like this, whereas the other key value pair databases like Mongo and things like that, they're going to be a further distance in mapping.
I think key value databases, for example, are certainly extremely efficient if you have limited requirements where you just need an extremely fast data throughput. But if you have a scenario with a data set which has been growing over the years and which incorporates highly structured text documents and combines it with other data and things like that, then we are certainly better off looking into XML standards and all the tools which help you to process those standards.
Now, you keep calling this a database. Is this something that can take a portion of an already existing XML document, replace it with something new, or are you only doing functional application, turning an entire tree into another tree and then replacing the whole thing?
No, it can update parts of the document tree.
So and, we essentially have all of our typical database applications, like the equivalent of updating a row in a table rather than just regenerating the table then.
Yeah, sure. You would update a single element within that document, not the entire document. You don't need to do that. I think from concerning its background, the storage backend, it pretty much works like any other database, be it relational or not. I mean, you have cache, you have at least internally, you have transactions, things like that. So the technology in the background is not that different from you need B-trees, stuff like that. So the document is not stored. Yeah. The document is not stored on the file system.
Are the transactions, you said only internally, can I have two processes running at the same time and not jumble up the data then? Is there some way for me to say I'm moving money from this account to this account and somebody else is moving some money out of that and not having the numbers get all jumbled?
That's possible. But right now our transaction support is still a little bit limited. It needs some more development. Right now, we mostly use transactions internally, so the user cannot define the boundaries of the transaction himself, but it's done automatically. You can certainly say I want to lock that document or that collection now and then process a few queries, a few updates, and then unlock it afterwards. But right now there's not a user-defined rollback. That's a missing feature right now. Which wasn't too much so far. It wasn't too much a problem for our users.
Well, yeah, it really depends on the use case. I mean, you're obviously not writing, industrial financial transactions with this yet, in which case you'd need that sort of thing. But, I mean, if you're doing things like blog and website publishing and things like that, then that would make sense to not quite need that just yet. How about security? Are there roles and things in this so that I can partition the data based on incoming credentials?
Oh, yeah, sure. Various mechanisms. Out of the box, we support the Unix-like access rights on your documents and collections. Well, I have to say, for the user, the database very much looks like a hierarchical directory where I just put my documents into so-called collections, which are hierarchical. And you can certainly control access to those collections as well as documents using a permission system. What is also possible is to define roles and things using a standard called XACML. This also allows you to restrict access to certain function libraries. So you can keep users from posting queries which could damage your system in any way.
What's the architecture of this? This is Java, right?
Yeah, that's Java.
So all the code's in Java. There's not pieces of it in some other languages, just one big blob of Java.
Yeah, I think pretty much most of it is Java, though certainly many tools around it are also written in XQuery already.
Oh, okay, cool. So what kind of a hosting environment does it require to run? I mean, are there pieces that can be plugged together, or is it all just one big thing?
Well, basically, it has been designed as a library which could be used embedded. We have some users which are using Xist embedded in desktop applications, but you could also simply embed it into any Servlet container. So whatever Servlet container you have, Tomcat, Jetty, it can just be integrated into your web application, or you could certainly also run it standalone and access it through the network.
And so you're editing the source code of this with other people using whatever's best for Java in terms of group development?
Yeah, we're pretty much using Subversion. Well, as IDE, we're a little bit divided. We have some Eclipse users. Some are using IntelliJ. Well, I'm sometimes using VI or Emacs, whatever.
Cat, whatever takes, right? Yes. So where might I see an example of, other than the Xist database site itself, are there other sites running this that I might be familiar with?
Yeah, there are a few live sites. For example, the U.S. State Department has a pretty nice site online, which is all written in XQuery. And I think it's one of the most well-designed websites for viewing historical documents. You know, they have the State Department publishes those historical volumes. I think one a year, and they have now started to present this online. And so, if you go to history.state.gov. You'll see a website which is entirely powered by XQuery scripts and Xist in the background.
Wow. And so when did they decide to use that, and what were they comparing it with? What else is competing in this space?
Oh, there are some pretty large commercial companies competing with us, so to say. First of all, nearly all the major SQL database vendors do also offer XML database extensions, whatever you call it. So it's like, it's more like you can define one part of your table to contain XML, and then you can also use XQuery to query that. So that's Oracle has it. IBM has it, Microsoft SQL Server has it. So those are the mixed approaches. And there are also commercial vendors of native XML databases. I think MarkLogic is right now developing into the biggest one.
So how did you win over those? How did the State Department pick you instead of those? Do you have any insight into their decision process?
I know those who developed the website, but I'm not into the decision process. I didn't try to sell Xist to them, but I think one advantage Xist has is, I think it's pretty straightforward to install. To get it up and running is not that difficult, and we also always try to provide an integrated environment where you can immediately start hacking away your code and create your own stuff. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, for example, the main man behind that historian website did not have much experience in any higher programming languages before. He just started with XML documents and then somehow had to find his way through XQuery. And I think he has been pretty successful with that.
This is really neat. Was the data somehow in XML beforehand, or did he have to kind of create an XML backend for
it? Yeah, no, for documents like this, there's basically one standard. It's the TI, the Text Encoding Initiative.
Oh, I see. So you can write a translator that would translate it to a well-formed XML and then put it in.
Yeah, it is an XML. It is a TI is an XML schema, mainly used by historians or other people in the humanities. So it's a full-blown, large, very complex standard. But I think nowadays, if you want to publish anything in the humanities, you have to know TEI.
That's really great. So it seems likely that this kind of structured data will be, there'll be more of it all the time, and you provide a great front end for it. Well, that's great.
Yeah, sure. I think it's still. I think XML is still developing, despite all criticism about it being too complex and all those angle brackets and things. I think people more and more recognize that standards are important, and there's no way around XML if you're talking about standardization. Right. If you really want to take those documents and give them away to other people and exchange them with other projects, you have to use XML and you have to use the standards which people have been working for years. I mean, TI has been around for, I don't know, I think it has been around before XML even. So
really? Wow.
Yeah, it has really been fought out.
I noticed you use my friend Doug Cutting's Lucene engine for the text searching. That's something new?
Yeah, that's something new we added in the 1.4 release. The problem was to integrate Lucene into XQuery. So, in XQuery, you don't want to query the entire document. You want to query certain parts of that document. So you want to say, find me all paragraph on all chapters having a title containing whatever. The new thing is a tight integration between Lucene and the XQuery engine. So you can really use Lucene on the node level. Define indexes on single nodes, have Lucene scoring applied to your query results and stuff like that.
Didn't mean to kill you with the Lucene question there. Sorry about that, Randall.
That's good. I do appreciate the fact, though, that I hadn't seen much of XQL until I was looking at the examples on your website earlier today for the database. And I must say that now that I've looked at it, I'm happy that they actually created a language that isn't entirely driven by angle brackets. I mean, the one thing I really hated about XSLT is the demand to make XSLT's control or look like XML data drove me nuts. So XQL, I can finally probably start working with.
Yeah. I also think it's important to point out that, though we have a lot of users in the humanities, there are also completely different applications powered by the same technology. For example, I've been working for a long time with a company which has a business, ERP tool, and they model, basically they customize databases for their customers, and they are using Xist, so to say, as a back end, which contains the model from which they then generate the Oracle database. So that's one use, for example, or while other people use it collect statistics from chip production machines, things like that. So there's a whole wide range of different uses. It's not at all limited to just only complex text documents, but there are lots of other possible applications for XQuery and XMLDBs and stuff.
Wow. Well, this just sounds like a really interesting project. If I had a lot more XML data to deal with, I'd be jumping in with this right away. Unfortunately, it's not what my current client demands that I do, so I can't really spend a lot of time with this. But it sounds like you have a really interesting stack of tools here, all the way from being able to store XML documents and query them efficiently, all the way out to generating whatever documents need to do that, and providing the array of interfaces, providing SOAP and REST and all sorts of things, means that this is really can be a glue component inside a much larger system. And frankly, that's very fascinating. And in fact, you've been working on it for a while, shows, because you've got a lot of stuff going on. And I know you have a pretty wide team of people that are working on this. So I think this is definitely something, if any of our listeners are looking at doing that sort of thing, this is definitely something that I would encourage you to take a look at deeper. So you have any last words before we wrap up here today?
No, I would certainly also like to encourage people to not only work with Exist and try it out and everything, but we're also always happy about getting new contributors, be it in coding. If you're a good Java coder, you're welcome. But also if you're a documentation writer, or if you're good at XML XQuery, there's always lots of stuff to work on. So our team is very very active, and we try to work close together and have a good time. So.
Well, it's really cool. Thank you for staying up late. I know it's late in your time. It's midday in our time, so I know it's really late there in Germany. I appreciate that.
That's 11 staying p.m. up.
Okay, well, that's programmer time. What am I talking about? There we go.
This is when he gets his most productive.
Thank you. Thank you very much for this. I appreciate you coming on the show and talking about it. And best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Wolfgang. Well, I'm glad you took the lead on that, because I think I know what XML is, but after that, it was like all downhill for me. I understand a little bit. It's what's neat is when you go to something like the Office of the Historian, the State Department site that he was talking about, what a slick site that is, and it's all database-driven. And as he said, this guy wasn't really, an expert on database or programming or even PHP, but he was able to create a site that's extremely slick and desirable. If people want to take a look at it, it's history.state.gov, and there's a ton of documents there. I found this document from the Lyndon B. Johnson administration. It's titled The Indian Food Crisis. I don't think he's talking about chicken tikka masala, but anyway, you could read all about it here. And there's documents and there's links. And this is an example of a case where you have a ton of information.
Right.
And you need a way to easily make it accessible. And this made a great site that's very navigable.
And it needs to be repackaged in a way. I mean, the thing about an XML document that's marked up is there's a lot of probably meta information that would just be blah going to the screen. You want to be able to take that and index it based on that, but you don't need to necessarily present that if somebody's just trying to read the body of the document. So to have processors in the middle that understand the native XML format of the document and can take it and present it as natural HTML on a browser with all the navigation stuff around the outside, That's exactly what XSLT and now XQL were designed to do.
Right.
And I really like it that he's got a complete open source stack that can be the retail web publishing part of it as well, which is just that's incredible.
Yeah.
And I bet there's some APIs there too that can let me go query those documents from a RESTful interface somewhere on the side of that, not necessarily you can see from the front page, but it's very cool. Very, very, very great use of technology. Yeah. Exactly the kind of stuff that we're looking for with open source.
REST, WebDev, SOAP, XML, RPC, Atom. I mean, it's fully buzzword compliant.
Yeah, exactly. All the TLAs you could have in one session. Exactly.
Exactly.
I mean, well, when you know when his home page starts referring to W3.org pages every other link, you know it's going to be a little thick there for a bit. So my head spun a little bit. I tell you, I'm a decent programmer, and my head was spinning a little bit as I was staring at this stuff. So, but you know, that's not to scare anybody away, please.
Nobody really deals with XML directly. They're going to use a library to do this, right?
Well, yeah, and there's a number of libraries that are out there. I mean, there's a whole stack of stuff for every language out there, Java, Perl, PHP, that all deal with this stuff. And but the great thing is that, you know, the maturity of the stuff for XSLT is pretty much established, but XQL is still coming of its own. And to have something that already has this in a way that everything all links together nicely, and like I was seeing on one of the pages, he was talking about how, you know, I could have a query coming from another box that squirts the entire XQL query into the system. And if I squirt the same query a second time, it remembers what it did the first time. It caches that automatically for me. So I don't have to have cache logic on my side to figure out whether that's the same query or not, and whether the data might have been updated or not. So there's a lot of optimizations in there already. I mean, it seems like a fairly mature product. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes out of this. You know, like if you're listening at home and you start adopting this, drop me an email and let me know how this worked out for you, because this sounds like a really fascinating sort of thing. So,
well, and I think that you can be proud, Randall Schwartz, that you have this show has now brought down the State Department's website, which is, you know, I think for me, that's a first. I don't think we normally break government websites, but as a matter of course.
Are there black vans circling your place now?
Yeah.
They were circling mine 2 weeks ago, so I'm just trying to figure out.
Wow. Are we
evened this out now?
You really don't want to bring down the Department of State's website.
At least it wasn't .mil, okay? Then it would have been the black helicopters.
Okay? You know, somebody right now is running down the hall saying, "The server's down, what happened? We've only had 5 visitors in the last 2 months, and now there's 1,000 people there. Who mentioned us?" It's pretty funny. It's the power of the twit.
Well, depending on when you're listening to this, this could be Thanksgiving. So just wanted to wish a happy Thanksgiving for all of us in the U.S. and whoever else celebrates that around the world. It might actually be later than Thanksgiving, in which case you're recovering from Thanksgiving. But one way or the other, just wanted to post that in the post-show notes here. And also, Leo, I know you're not going to mention it, but happy birthday coming up on Sunday, right?
Yeah. And didn't you just have a birthday, too?
I just had a birthday, yeah. So yeah. I'm older.
Happy birthday to you. We were very close together.
Exactly. Like a week apart. So it's all pretty good. Yeah, I had a great birthday, actually.
What'd
turned
you do?
30.
Oh, I shut up. You lie.
30 hex.
Oh, I saw that tweet. I saw that tweet. I had to break out the calculator. 30 hex.
30 hex.
That's good.
I haven't been able to use that for, you know, 6 years, or else, you know, kind of gives away when you say 2C and 2B.
Yeah, so 2C is kind of a giveaway.
I'm 2C years old, right?
So I love it.
Now that I'm 30 for the next 9 years, I get to be X number hex instead of decimals. It'll be kind of cool.
Did you just know that, or did you have to get the programmer's calculator out?
Dude, I just knew it.
Oh, you're so good. Well, I'm 34, so
there we go. And somebody did point out that that means I'm 60 in octal, and I really don't want to go there.
This is why hex direction is better than octal.
That's the wrong direction. That's the wrong direction.
You're 60
speaking
in
of
octal,
coming up.
That's true. Wow.
There's my segue for that. Speaking of coming up, we have next week, we have Zonker. Joe Brockmeyer Zonker. Wait, no, is that right?
Zonker.
Zonker, right. You remember Zonker? We had him on about a year ago.
We had him on before, yeah.
We have, but he was really excited about the 11.2 update to OpenSUSE. So I had a chat with him, and we talked all about what's new in OpenSUSE 11.2. And it's always good to get, you know, community managers on board to talk about what they do and how they do it. And then, of course, coming up right after that, we have an unknown guest that Mr. John O'Bacon has not specified yet, but I'm sure it'll be wonderful. That's all I know about guests.
I think his parting words as he left today, after he said, "I know nothing about Exist, I'm leaving," was, right. "But I'll be sure to get a good guest, I promise."
I believe that was exactly it. And then, of course, the show I'm really looking forward to coming up after that is our friend, your friend and my friend, Chris DiBona, the open source coordinator at Google, is going to come back after having started this show 3 years ago. He's going to come back on and be on show number 100 to talk about all the stuff we've been able to talk about since then and also new things he knows about open source and things after that. We have a bunch of other shows after that. If you go to twit.tv/floss, there is a link there to my upcoming spreadsheet. If there's somebody on that list that you want to get bumped up in priority, make sure they write me, because then every time I get an email from somebody, I put them higher in the list. That's how it works. Because otherwise, there's 200 names. We'll be doing Floss Daily for a year and still not get all of them. But anyway, so the list is there. You can also follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/MERLYN. That's Merlin with a Y. I'm getting more and more followers every week. I'm really appreciating that. It's kind of fun because it's kind of like having a little audience of my own.
Now that you're 30, I think it's appropriate that you should have some followers.
To have an audience, yes. That's very cool. Anyway, so follow me there. And of course, I do my live streaming from time to time. So if you want to watch me do karaoke, watch my Twitter feed and you'll see where how that's going.
Cool.
So that's all I got, Leo.
All sorts of busy, busy things going on with the Merlin.
It happens.
Well, thank you, Randall, and we'll see you next week. We're going to talk about OpenSUSE. Now we are taping this before Thanksgiving, so have a happy Thanksgiving. You're going to be with family, or
actually, I'm going to be with an old friend who I've known for 30 years and haven't had kind of them for like 5 or 6 years. So it's really going to be great.
That's the best kind. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love my family, but there's nothing like being with old friends.
Mm-hmm. Even ones that are 30.
That's old.
Or 34.
Or 34. That's old.
Old.
All right, Randall. Have a great time, and we'll see you next week on Floss Weekly.